Hi, Dina.
Hi, how are you?
Baruch Hashem, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. All
Let's
right, I
see.
see you.
Is it too dark in here, though?
It's not super bright, but I can definitely see you.
Okay. I was going to put a different background, but I'm using a different laptop than my usual, and it not seeing where to go and do it within Zoom. Hopefully that background is good enough.
Yeah, no, this is fine. You're definitely visible, so yeah.
I have a classroom background usually, which can be fun to do.
I will say this is technically already recording, but I will trim all of this out when I post the final. So don't worry about that if you have any questions or anything that we just need to, say out loud for the next few minutes.
Okay. No, it sounds good. Is there good enough reception? I'm up in the attic. Is there the audio coming in okay? The video is not.
Yeah, so far this is fine. Everything's clear.
Okay, great.
And with your permission, I'm going to share this to Facebook as well, because we've been getting some good viewership on Facebook.
Okay, whatever works best for you.
Great. Great.
We are so technically sophisticated. Share to Facebook.
We're learning,
Best. Yeah.
aren't we? How's everything going there for you?
Baruch Hashem, one of the reasons I took the 7:30 p.m. slot is because we have four kids who are in fully online schools now, all trying to. So, gotta wait until either I have to do lunchtime meetings, they usually have lunch breaks from 12 to 1, or I go to the phone or I do it at night. So,
Ah.
that we had this slot.
Well, we would have
Are
made time no matter when.
things calm by you?
Yeah, I live on the Upper West Side. It's just me, so all I have to do is figure out work during the day, basically. But we've been doing so many of these. I've been doing three a day all week, which is great. It's keeping me busy and definitely on a strict routine.
Okay. Talk me through the process you mentioned in terms of people, I guess, chatting
Yeah.
you through
So
chat
basically
or.
what we've basically been doing is the presenters have been going, for the most part, the presenters have been going for like a solid 30 to 35 minutes, just giving their presentation, going through their slides or whatever they're showing, and then taking questions at the end, either through the chat function or through the Q&A function at the bottom. Which if you'd like, I'm happy to moderate. If you want to go back and forth and moderate yourself, that's fine as well, but I'll be here the whole time. For some of the presentations, we've also been like allowing people to raise their hands, and I've been unmuting them and letting people, like verbally say their questions. So it's totally up to you how you want to take your questions. If you want to take questions throughout, I'm also happy to like interrupt you. I just don't want to distract you or throw you off.
Yeah, no, I usually do it as interactive talks, tapping the audience around and things like that. But for this, I had figured that that would be, I think, a little bit more too disjunctive. It's easy to go cut
Sure.
over to people when they're right there in the classroom and be able to do a back
Yes.
and forth and things like that. This, I figured, was going to be a bit tougher to do that. So why don't we just go
A little bit.
until the end? And then if you want to moderate, I don't know, is it too distracting to you to try to tune into what I am saying and then see which questions are relevant, or is that very doable?
It just sort of depends on how many things I'm doing at the same time or how many emails I'm trying to answer. But we can see what kind of questions come through. Mostly people haven't been asking too many questions during the presentations, I'll say. Like they've been sort of waiting until the end when we open up the floor. But I can definitely keep an ear to what you're saying and try to be mindful of what I'm sending through.
Okay, sounds good. So why don't we just do that? We'll do the hour and then half hour plus Q&A.
Perfect. I'm just getting this all queued up on Facebook. All right, so we are live on Facebook as well now too. I'm just gonna mute myself, but if you need me, I'm here. So just get my attention.
Okay, I just shared my screen. I assume it's showing.
It.
Okay.
Yep, you're in good shape. And then in like 7 or 8 minutes, right around 7:30, I can give you a cue, or if you just want to start, it's up to you.
Okay.
Dean Wasserman, whenever you're ready, we've got people that are logging in here and on Facebook. So take a minute and the floor is yours.
Okay. Thank you, Dina. And good evening, everyone. Good Chodesh. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hopefully in the schus of our spending some time together now, we'll be able to have a little bit more zechuyos, a little bit more merits for people who need it today to be able to go and bring both Geula to the world and Refuah Shleima to them. We're going to be going and delving into a couple of pieces that are related to each other at YU. When I go and give talks, I tend to do it on Rosh Chodesh. That was one of the reasons why I went and grabbed this slot today. We call them the Torah U Business talks. And so we're going to go and try to give you a little bit of a feel for how we bring that together, but also relate that to the current matzav, the current situation that we are in, and see what kind of insights we might be able to get from Torah U Business into some of the things that we're experiencing right now, and also a little bit of a forward-looking element of how we might be able to go and see ways that we might be able to go and set the table for where we're going to go next. And so, as I mentioned, being able to bring together both the Torah U Business parts of it, in particular also with the lemonade stand metaphor, we'll take a little bit of an idea from entrepreneurship and be able to go and see how it applies. How it might give us some insights into a couple of shilas, a couple of questions that we might ask from our Masorah, from the Torah. And so I'm going to go and plant the seeds by going first into the Torah side of it. And then we will go and take a look at that concept from entrepreneurship. We'll go and relate it to our everyday lives. We'll also then go and see how Chazal related it, how they had already tuned into it millennia ago, being able to go and see how it would be relevant to some of the halachic practices that we have to go and adopt. And then we'll go and see how we can relate it to both before we had the virus hit the world and now as it's here, and then where we might be able to go next in terms of the situation that we're in, and see maybe some of the insights that we're able to get from that entrepreneurial concept. And so let's go and take a dive into the first of the questions. This is also within the Shloshim days before the Chag, the 30 days before Pesach, that we're supposed to be going and learning a little bit about it. We'll go and tap some of that right now. When we're going on Pesach, we're going and doing our laning. We're going to be going and tapping Parshas Beshalach. And this is the first pasuk from Parshas Beshalach. Nebeshalach paro et ha'am, when Paro was sending the nation out from Mitzrayim, v'lenacham elokim derech eretz plishtim. Hashem did not go and take them the way of eretz plishtim. Ki karov hu. Think about what we usually translate ki as. Pretty simple word, pretty straightforward that we go and translate it as because. And so we go and take that meaning of the word. This pasuk doesn't seem to make sense. Hashem didn't take us the way of the plishtim because it was the short one. You would think that Hashem should take us the way of the plishtim to Eretz Yisrael, between Mitzrayim and Eretz Yisrael, specifically because it was the short one. And so because of that, the Chazal a lot of times go and try to jump through hoops to have us understand a little bit better. Translating ki a lot of times is something like despite, something that goes and flips the meaning. And so we want to go and be able to see, I will come back around to this pasuk after we go and take a look at the concept that we're going to be going and talking about, going relating that to some of the human elements of what we're going to be discussing. And we're going to revisit this and see if we maybe understand why the basic shot, why understanding ki as because, actually does make perfect sense when we go and look at it from a little bit of a different perspective. So that's the first of the questions that we're going to plant and then come back around to later on. The second one is going to be coming from the Gemara. Bit of a different question, a very different situation that we're going to be taking a look at here. This is from Bava Metzia, Daf Pei Dalet. Very nice and easy to remember for those of us who do Daf. Pei Dalet is just Daf backwards. This is getting into the most iconic Chavrusa duo that we have in the Gemara. We have Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, who were the two who were the iconic ones who were going and grappling together over all of the things that they were learning, being able to go and raise each other's game, be able to go and have each other become Gedolei Hador, become the best of the generation. And unfortunately, Reish Lakish was nifter. Reish Lakish passed away. And Rav Yochanan was devastated by it. And the Chagamim were going and looking at, what can we go and do to be able to go and replace the Chavrusa, the person who helped be able to go and turn Rabbi Yochanan into Rabbi Yochanan. And so they found what would seem to be a terrific solution. They went and found another one, the Gedolei Hador, Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas, who they said, okay, we have the next Chavrusa for you here. Have at it, you know, go back into the Beis Medrash and be able to go and learn together in this. And along the way, we can go and see a little bit of the difference in terms of the styles that we had between those two Chavrusas. And so Rabbi Yochanan, when he was going and talking to Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas, it's the first of the things that's highlighted here in yellow. He would go and be telling that what was the great thing that Rabbi Reish Lakish was going and doing. He would go on everything that I said. He would go and throw 24 darts at me. He would go and throw 24 questions about why I might be wrong. And because of that, he went and raised my game by going and pushing back against me. And he was complaining to Rabbi Elazar that he was seeing that it was not at all that same kind of a feel. At Amris, the second of the yellows here, At Amris, Tanya de Besayalach. I can go and cite something to go and support you. I can go and be able to show you why you are right, Rabbi Yochanan. And Rabbi Yochanan was trying to go and coach his new Chavrusa about why that doesn't work for me. I need someone who's going to go and push back. And unfortunately, Rabbi Elazar was not able to go and adjust. And so the question, there's lots of things. This is one of my favorite sugyas in Shas because it's so rich. But one of the key questions that we can go and take a look at is why couldn't Rabbi Elazar adjust? Why couldn't he go and take this feedback and be able to go and adjust the way and his style that he was going and being Chavrusa? And so that's the second of the questions that we're going to be asking, a pretty different one compared to our key question from before. But we'll be able to go and see that we'll get some insights into both of these in terms of how we can go and understand a little bit the human dynamic and a little bit of some of the things that go on, both Bein Adam Le'atzmo and Bein Adam Le'Chavero, in terms of how we can go and see that this is in some ways anticipating some of the things that we'll see in our daily lives. So let me go and introduce that by going to a very modern day example. This is something that happened a little bit over a year ago. This was with a daughter of mine. This is a daughter of mine who had graduated from YU a couple of years ago, and she had just gone to Eretz Yisrael, and she had joined the Israeli army. And this is in the couple of months before she was going and joining the army. She had been there about 2 or 3 months. And she sent to me on January 1st, 2019, an email that said, Abba Mazel Tov, you're a year away from going and doing your Siyum HaShas. This was on January 1st. And so at that time, I hadn't realized that at MetLife Stadium, they were going to jump the gun by 3 days and go and move up the Siyum HaShas from when we were supposed to be going and doing it on January 4th. And so I sent back to her, no, well, actually, the Siyum HaShas is going to be, and as you're going and seeing this, please think about what this says to you. I sent back to her, it's going to be on 1/4/20. So when you go and see that at first, think about what this said to you. For some people, people who are here and grew up in the U.S. or in similar countries like that, in terms of how we go and read numbers, we would have gone and immediately saw, and we immediately have seen this as January 4th, 2020. If you are from Eretz Yisrael or from some other country that has a different structure for how they go and interpret these numbers, you would have seen something very different. Your first instinct would have been April 1st, 2020. What my daughter helped me realize was that just in the couple of months that she had been in Eretz Yisrael, she had gone from seeing this as January 4th, 2020 to going and seeing it as April 1st, 2020, because what she went and replied to me was, Abba, when I took a look at this first, I thought you were saying that the Siyum HaShas was going to be on April Fool's Day. And so this is where I tuned into how we have the place that we are, the way in which we are operating, the way in which we have grown up even, shaping the way that we go and attribute meaning to things. We have a simple set of numbers, digits, and slashes. A, we go and see this as a date, but then also how we go and attribute the meaning to the different parts of the date. My daughter at first was seeing it as that she had now been in the April 1st realm, and I was meaning it as the January 4th one. I sent back to her when I realized that the disconnect that we had there, that thank goodness I hadn't asked her to go and pick me up from the Siyum HaShas, because she would have been almost 3 months late to go and pick me up on April 1st. But it was at that point that I was going and realizing that we can go and see echoes of what we're going to call the entrepreneurial blueprints, the blueprints of the world, the mental models that we have, and even something so simple as a date. An interesting thing is a little bit of a glimpse into her sense of humor also, but also echoing this. About 3 months later, I got an email from her. She said, Abba, yesterday was April 7th, so I celebrated July 4th. This is where the flipping again of the numbers and where it has some fundamental implications for the timing that we have in our lives and the ways in which we also attribute meanings to things. And so as I mentioned, this is where we're going to be going and tapping a concept. It's called blueprints, the way in which we have the mental model that we go and look at the world. Entrepreneurial blueprints, some research has been done, for instance, on how if you have been going and working in a large company, you've developed a blueprint there about how a large bureaucratic organization or something that has a lot of support behind it works. And then when you are going into a startup to go and found it, how you have to have a major adjustment to your blueprint. You have to go and be able to understand where the disconnects are. You have to be able to understand how you are not prepared because you have some holes. And also some of the ways in which you have to go and be tuning into how that organization works and how people are motivated in a very different way than what you are used to. And so we can go and see how we can bring this concept from entrepreneurship into our daily lives, into the basic ways in which we go and operate. Let's go and take a look at one example. This is going to be one that I guess some of the younger folks might not recognize, this kind of car. People from New York, I think, very much would recognize it, but other realms, it's starting to go and disappear. If we go and take a look at this yellow car, what is this? This is a cab. The New York Times recently had a story about a person who got out of a cab and got arrested for it. Think about why that would be. It's not that the person was stepping out too far away from the cab, from the curb. It's not a bunch of the things that people usually guess at. You go and think about what is this disconnect that this person would have had here. What was the explanation that they gave to the New York Times? They gave to the cops first, and then the New York Times was going and describing it. He got arrested for not paying when he got out of the cab. I think this is a fundamental thing that everyone knows that you have to go and do. You get out of a cab, you have to pay for that service. He went and talked to the police about how he was usually an Uber rider. He was used to the equivalent of what we would call the Uber blueprint. What is that compared to the cab blueprint? He, when he gets into an Uber, doesn't go and tell them where is he needing to go. That's something in a cab. That's the first step that you do when you get in. And what's the last step when you're going and getting out of a cab? You have to pay. Well, in an Uber, that's all taken care of. You don't have to go and do that. And so the blueprint he had gotten used to did not call for telling them where you're going and then paying at the end of it. And so he was back in that blueprint. He was now in a new situation. He was now in a new context where that blueprint didn't apply, where there were disconnects between it and how he now had to go and operate. And so these are some of the ways in which we can go see some glimpses, just like my daughter had in a very different situation, being able to go and read a number and it was going and affecting her. Here, he was on autopilot, just going and applying his Uber blueprint. It didn't apply in cabs. He hadn't realized the disconnect. And then he got into trouble, was able to get himself out of it by going and explaining essentially how that blueprint disconnect was at the core of what he was going and facing. We can go and see some other echoes of it. Again, we're going to stick with the transportation metaphor for some of these examples to be a little consistent with it. When I was in the airport in Salt Lake City about a year ago, I looked down, and this is what I saw down on the ground. We can see some echoes here of what maybe caused the Salt Lake City Airport Authority to go and put this on the ground. There unfortunately might have been a pedestrian coming from another country who was going looking the wrong way and got blindsided by a car. And now they have these actual reminders, physical reminders there to go and prompt you to remember that this is a different blueprint that you're in now. This may be a different situation, and you have to go and make sure that you're looking in the right direction for where the cars are going to be coming from. This is, when we're going and looking at it, the reactive that we have to go and be able to understand after we get hit by some kind of rude awakening about where the disconnects are. That's the reactive approach to when you have that blueprint change in a new situation. We can even see, though, how we can proactively tell that there's going to be a disconnect, and yet it's still hard for us to go and adjust to it. So let me go and take you back a few years. I used to do each summer a program in Scotland. When I go to a foreign country, I happen to love driving, renting a car and driving in that foreign country. I love being able to go and have the challenge of being able to go and diagnose how the roads are a little bit different, how the driver's a little bit different. The challenge of being able to still show good mitos, even if they're very aggressive drivers in that country and the culture there is a little bit different from the very nice drivers that we have in the U.S. And so I would typically go, and I used to love renting a car in Eretz Yisrael and being able to drive around there. When I went to Scotland, though, there was one key thing that they had to go and do for me. My condition was, I'm not going to go there unless you go and have a driver for me. Why was that? Because it's pretty obvious that there's going to be a major disconnect in my driving blueprint. They drive on the other side of the road there, and I wasn't about to go and take a chance that I'm going to have a way in which my blueprint disconnect of the way in which I'm going to be thinking, I'm going to forget for a second, I'm going to be thinking about something else, and then suddenly I'm making a turn into onrushing traffic. Essentially that I would be the driver right here in the middle of this screen who is going and heading in the wrong direction, risking life and limb by going and having that driving disconnect and the blueprints that we're going in and dealing with there. And so that was why I had to go and be driven in Scotland. And as I was going and trying to understand how risky is it to go and do that, I ran into on Fodor's, a travel site, a discussion that they had there, some harrowing tales of people who went and tried to go and drive themselves, rented the car in the foreign country that drives on the other side of the road, about near-death experiences that they had and all sorts of problems. One thing is some solutions they were coming up with that was similar to the look that we were just seeing on the last slide of a driver that would go and give a visual reminder to himself by going and taking a sticky note with an arrow in the other direction and putting it on top of the steering wheel, you know, have a constant reminder about it. And we'll see some echoes of that we can go and see applied to our current situation. But there's all sorts of ways in which we have to go and remind ourselves. Apparently in Australia, they ran into too many Americans who went and took a chance on going and driving on the other side of the road. They had to go and put up these signs to be able to remind people that we go and drive on the other side here. So this is the way in which we have it even tough to go and adjust when we know that there's going to be a disconnect. One last example from the round of realm of transportation. This is a pretty famous video on YouTube. A lot of people might be familiar with it. Other people, I'm sure, are not. It's one that when I ran into it, I found it as a great way to go and crystallize it. There's an engineer named Destin Sandler, and he does a series of a variety of things that have to do with engineering and other things that he goes as pet topics of his. There's one that he did that was called the backwards bicycle. This is his favorite hobby, to go bike riding ever since he's been very young. One day, there was someone he works with who went and presented him with a gift. It was a brand new bicycle. It went and differed from a typical bicycle in just one way. That way was, it was backwards in this sense, that when you go and turn the handlebar to the right, the wheel goes to the left. And when you turn the wheel, the handlebars the other direction, the wheel goes the other direction. And so this is why it was a backwards bicycle. Destin said, oh, I'm seeing how this is different. You see on the video. They're saying, hey, this should be no problem. I'll just go and adjust to it. This is something that I'm an ace at, being able to go and ride a bike. And so he went, he hopped onto the bike, and you see him going and taking his first ride. He goes 5 feet, and then he falls off. He then gets up, and he's laughing, as you hear it on the video, but he says, this was the most frustrating thing, despite the fact that it looks like I'm laughing here, that I'm not able to go and adjust to this. It is so fundamentally a simple thing to go and adjust, how you go and turn the handlebar. And yet, my blueprint is so ingrained in me that I can't go and do it. He ended up having to go and spend 8 months of daily bike riding until he could go and adjust to this brand new blueprint. And he could go and ride the backwards bicycle. And even then, you see on the video that when his cell phone goes off, he's thrown off again. He's going as he's concentrating, and if he has this problem, he is thrown off from his game, and he has real problems of being able to go and stick to that blueprint that he had so ingrained in him. An interesting thing is towards the end of it, he shows a present that he gave to his young son, his six-year-old son, that it's a backwards bicycle. His son had been riding for a couple of years, and his son gets on the bike. He also has the same kind of problem. But his son, in 2 weeks of riding, is able to do what Destin took 8 months to go and do. And so a very fundamental way in which they were going and adjusting in very different rates and very different challenges to a very different blueprint. So if we go and take a look at these kind of concepts, these kinds of examples, and return back to where we started off with our question from Bishalach, think about maybe some of the implications for why we can understand why Hashem couldn't take us the short route because it was short. We go and think about how what Bnei Israel were coming out of Mitzrayim with, what was the blueprint that they had? They had an Avdus blueprint, a slavery blueprint, and everything that went into that. What were they going to need when they were coming to Eretz Israel? They're going to need to have a radically different blueprint. They're going to have a Chayrus, a freedom blueprint. They were going to have a country-building blueprint. It's very tough to go and transition. You can't just snap your fingers and transition from one blueprint to the other. And so if we're going and taking a look at what did Bnei Israel need to succeed at being able to go to, we have all sorts of other explanations for why they had to go and do it. We just recently had the reading around the Agil and a bunch of the punishment that emerged for that and other things like that that were the reasons why they weren't going the short route. But here we can see precisely why Ki Karovhu would be true from a blueprint perspective. They had to go and adjust through those 40 years in the Midbar to that. One of the other things that we have is one of the ways in which Chazal explained why Moshe Rabbeinu, another reason why he was the perfect leader for Bnei Israel, they go and talk about Moshe's blueprint. Moshe had not been an Eved. Moshe had not gone and developed the Avdus blueprint. In fact, he had been away from Mitzrayim for decades. And so Moshe, as leading Bnei Israel to go and develop a different blueprint, didn't have to go and undo his own blueprint. And in that way, it was a very different way that he had a challenge of going and leading the people to was a lot more of the freedom blueprint that he was used to compared to the one that they had to go and detach themselves from. we go and take a look now, think through, are there any other places within our halachic corpus whenever we can go and see where Chazal were going and doing things that we're going to be able to go and be a siyag for the Torah, protect us from issues with it, or where they were going to be going and architecting things for us about where they were tuning into these blueprint concepts. There are a bunch of them. Let me just go and toss out some of them in the Q&A part. If other people have other ones, I love hearing other examples of it. Let me go and toss out some examples for you before we then go and return to some of the broader picture things that we went and teed up early on. If we go and take a look at, for instance, the challenge that Destin had with being able to go and adjust to the way in which he had to go and take a long time to go and do it compared to his son, we can take a look at, in some ways, the most baffling of the sources for a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Throughout almost all of Shas, we have Elisha ben Abuya. Elisha ben Abuya is known as Acher. We go and try to bury his name wherever we can. But in Pirkei Avos and Perek Dalet and in the Mishnah Chaf, we see quoted explicitly Elisha ben Abuya, interesting on its own for that. But what he says, he goes and draws the metaphor that a lot of us will be familiar with, of going and being able to say that, when is it going to be easy to go and learn? When you're like a piece of paper that hasn't been written on yet. But if you are a piece of paper that's been written on and now has been erased, it's a lot harder for you to go and learn. It's very similar to Destin having to go and undo his decades worth of a blueprint that he had developed compared to his son, who had a much newer blueprint. He was able to go and adjust to it. One of the other ways that we can go and see what Chazal had instituted, you think back to December 4th. One of the only ways in which we go and have an English calendar halakhic implication. What is the thing that was instituted by Chazal on December 4th? This is when we're going and making the transition between Mesein Bracha and Mesein Talu Matar. We're going and taking a look at that transition. What did Chazal go and institute as we're going and dealing with this difference between now going and saying this very different phrase, that they were going and saying that if you are unsure whether you made that cut over on December 4th or onwards, that you have to assume that you are still in the blueprint of the old way of saying it. Within 30 days, you are not going to be able to go and adjust if you're not going and concentrating on it to that new blueprint. And so because of that, they went and instituted this period that we have from December 4th onwards for the next little while of going and realizing that you haven't cut over to the new blueprint, and you have to go and assume that you're still in the old one. Interestingly, today, when I was going and putting this together, I ran into a little depiction of this. We can go and see that even Bart Simpson has to go and deal with this. I will not forget to say, Mashiach Baruch Merida Gashem. We're going to have the same kind of way that we're having to go and cut between blueprints and be able to go and adjust to those types of things. Chazal knew that. That's why they went and instituted that breakover period for us. Another one that we can go and take a look at is when we're going and taking a look at the difference between doing something lishma and doing something shelo lishma. Or we're going and taking a look at in Sota, this is on Daf Chav Beis on Beis, where we're talking about, should we talk shelo lishma, ba lishma? Can you go and cut right over from going and doing something lishma, shelo lishma, into lishma, that no, you can't. This is what the Eitz Yosef goes and highlights, that if you're unsure, if this is in that period, that's the equivalent of when you're unsure between the two models of Tein Talo Matar and V'tein Bracha, that you have to go and assume that as you're going to trying to be doing it lishma, that you're essentially still in the shelo lishma period, because we have to go and be able to see that it's very hard to go and leave that blueprint, be able to go and change how we operate and the mental model that we have in a very different way. Now to go and just take one last example in terms of this. This is more of a personal example for me. This is going back almost 2 years ago when my younger son was going to be bar mitzvah. It was Parshas Korach. And I realized that for the Shabbos afternoon of Parshas Korach, it was actually going to be the double high 36th anniversary of my own bar mitzvah. I had had Parshas Chukas Balak, and there were all sorts of ways in which I would love to be able to go revisit my old laning from that at Mincha of that Shabbos, that I would love to be able to go and lane the first Aliyah. And so I went up to the Rav of the Shul, where I go to my Daf Shir on Shabbos afternoon and then Davin Mincha there, and I asked him if I could just go and be able to lane. And he said to me, no. He said, you are not allowed to, because we are very medactic here in this Shul about being able to go and pronounce things in the right way. And he knew from having me be the chazan for the Suyat Zibor at times, he had heard that when I go and say things, I, for better or for worse, back when I was in first grade, this goes back to when your blueprints are developed, I had developed a havara, a pronunciation that was Sfardit. Even though I try to go and pronounce things as much as possible to be translated the way that everyone who I was listening to is going to be able to understand, When I am going and defaulting to my blueprint, I would go and say, if you think about how you would go and pronounce this word up here, a lot of people out there would be going and saying that this is chukas. When I would go and pronounce it, I would say chukat. Because back when my blueprint was developed by whatever teacher I had back then, I had a dear Svarti teacher during whatever formative grade it was that I was learning it. And I would go and effectively go and put a dot into every saf that I would see, and everything would become the equivalent of chukat. And so that was why the rabbi was going and saying, no, you can't, because we need you to go and pronounce it as chukas instead. And so I assured him that I would go and work on it and be able to go and make sure that I would be able to go and do it right. So I went and started preparing. And usually you'd go and be focusing on the trup. You'd be focusing on everything else, but the thing that I ended up having to completely focus on. There were 33 suffs in that first aliyah, and that was what I had to concentrate on during my entire prep, to be able to go and try to make sure that I was undoing the blueprint of that. When I go and see a suff, I say it as a tough. And that was the most jarring thing in the world for me to go and do, to be able to go and just undo that little dot. When I was going and leaning it there in shul, I actually messed up on one of them. I had to go and catch myself and back up to it. And this is despite my explicitly understanding that there is this disconnect. I have to go and adjust to it. Am I trying to go and practice from it? But this is where we can go and see a microcosm of how tough it is to go and undo that. And so one of the key things to do when it comes to being able to be proactive about this, go and find a way that you can go and see in this new situation, this new context you're heading into, where do I have a disconnect? Let me go and identify at least one of them, where I am going and assuming that I am a round peg going into this round hole that I have. And instead, this new situation is really that square peg. So if we go and take a look at our matzav right now, we can go and see that there are several ways that we might be able to go and identify where we can go and have that there's a difference in our blueprints compared to what it was before the virus hit and now what it is right now, and also how that might go and translate into down the road. And so if we go and take a look at these things, these are the first five that came to mind. About if we're taking a look at our pre-corona blueprint, or at least mine, and then some of the new things that we're going and grappling with right now. We take a look at the first word of the day. We get up, we're groggy, and I would typically go and mumble it. I would be going and trying to make sure I'm concentrating on that crucial first word. But now I have a much deeper appreciation every day that I wake up and I feel my body that I'm intact, that I'm not feverish or anything like that. And I really can go and say modeth, thank you to Hashem, for being able to go and make sure that I can be whole body and that I had the rejuvenation of the night that now turns into modeh. They're going to try to go and maintain that as I go forward to be able to go and make sure that that acknowledgement of the first word of the day is able to go, and the deeper kavanah that I have for it is going to be able to go and be maintained. When it comes to being at Minyan, when I was going and pre-corona, I was actually fanatical about being at Minyan. There was one time about a year and a half ago where I had to be in San Antonio to go and give a talk on a Tuesday, and then I had to go and be in Silicon Valley on a Wednesday to give a talk. And unfortunately, with the flights and with the timing of the Minyanim and things like that, I wasn't going to be able to make it to Minyan. I jumped through a major hoop to be able to go and make it to Minyan. I went and flew to L.A., was able to catch Minyan there, stayed over in L.A. at my parents, and then flew from there after Shacharis in the morning up to Silicon Valley. That's how fanatical I was about it. When the Psak came out a couple of weeks ago, that you should not be going to Minyan, I found it jarring and wanted to go and rebel against that. It was my introduction to how my blueprint was a little bit flawed when it came to how I was looking at being at Minyan before it. And now I have a much deeper appreciation for when you have Divrei Arav, you have a Psak, even if it goes and it conflicts with your blueprint, you should be going and listening to it. That this is a real test that Hashem is going and putting to us about how much we go and place stock in the authority of our Rabbanim. And that was how I had to go and adjust my blueprint in terms of that. In terms of Minyan, I try to go and choose against all of these things, but a lot of our Minyanim, there's a phrase that I remember hearing when I was growing up, someone referred to a Chametz Minyan. That's a Minyan that takes, say, 19 minutes or 18 minutes for it to go and be done, rushing through things. We have a natural inclination to go and skip Tachanun when someone has an excuse for skipping Tachanun, even though it's a real bracha to us, we have to go and connect to Hashem through it. There's a phrase that I heard more recently about Aleinu as being Tfilas Haderech, people going and taking off their tefillin early and hitting the road, being able to go and see how there's a bunch of things that now we're able to go and be able to undo these pieces of our blueprint. We can go and we should be going at our own pace, our own more leisurely pace that we can go and be able to have kavanah. We can go and build in that where we before might have gone and bypassed saying korbanos, a crucial thing. We're going to shalma parim svatenu. We no longer have the Beis Hamikdash. We can go and make up for it by going and saying the korbanos. Go and take the time to be able to go and say that type of thing. being able to go and have Tachanun for, it was the first time in a while that I was able to go and say the last paragraph of the Monday, Thursday Tachanun, the last paragraph before we go and do Nefilas Apayim. And I can go and have much deeper kavana, and I much more appreciate being able to go and do that. There's also a suggestion by Moreno Rav Schefter, who said, go and also say Avinu Malkeinu, taking a page out of Tanis Chafei, about when Rabbi Akiva, in a time of a drought, said Avinu Malkeinu to go and bring water. And so go and be able to do these things. That's a very different approach to the minyan part. Just this past Shabbos, this is a very different model in terms of Shalosh Shudos. We usually go, and the men are in shul, as I mentioned, the Daf Yomi share that turns into mincha, and then being able to have Shalosh Shudos together with everyone else there in shul. And the women in my family, and my wife and daughters, would be here at home saying it. For the first time in years, we were able to, as a family, have Shalosh Shudos. Very different blueprint that we have now within the Corona blueprint. And then also just today, and it's in some ways very fortunate that I had to go and put this slide together for this talk. Usually in shul, we have the reminders about that it's Rosh Chodesh. Gabbai gives a clap before Shmona Esrei to go and remind us that we should say Yalav Yavo, or you have a neighbor who's going a little faster than you, and we'll go and say Yalav Yavo a little bit out loud. Going and taking a look at these blueprints, what do we have? We don't have a substitute for that now in our new blueprint when we're going and davening by ourselves at home. Going and thinking through that actually led me this morning to go and do the equivalent of Australia sign at the side of the road, or the sticky note on the steering wheel that has the arrow pointing the other direction. This is what my sitter looked like when I was going and doing this just before I was getting into Shmoneh Esrei. I went and put that visual reminder to myself in the book. I went and moved back to the pages to the beginning of Shmoneh Esrei, but had this pencil there where we had Yalav Yavo to go and be that visual reminder to me about, if you're still in your blueprint, about it not being a Rosh Chodesh davening, that there was that visual for me to be able to go and remind me about it. And so we go and take a look about the ways in which we're seeing this at the level, what I started off with, of talking about, this is the Bein Adam LeAtzmo within our own heads, within our own blueprint. We can also go and see how we can extend this now. A lot of us are cooped up in our houses with a bunch of other people. We can go and extend this to Bein Adam LeChavero. We can go and take a little bit of a model from the beginning of Bereishis. We can go and see the ultimate of the initial founding family of the world, where we have Adam and Chava coming together, and the Bein Adam LeChavero that Hashem is architecting for them. And Hashem goes and describes that as that relationship between them, a key two words, is Ezer Kenegdo. That is how they should be going and relating to each other. We have a little bit of a machlokes about what this actually means. And so when we go and think about this, we almost always think about Rashi, the core of how we would be able to go and see some interpretation of this. And the way that Rashi goes and talks about it is that if we are Zoche, it's going to be an Ezer, that the person who's across from us will be helping us, supporting us. And if we are not Zoche, if we are not worthy of it, then it's going to be pushback. It's going to be criticism. It's going to be Kenegdo. Rav Sauer, that was in the base reddish at Yula, when the Rebbeim there, back when I was there decades ago, and is now still like a Gadol who is going and doing this, when he was hearing me talk about this, he introduced me recently to what the Netziv says about it. It captures a lot more what I see as, well, we have to go and take the blueprint and be proactive about being able to go and see a very different take on Ezer Kenegdo. We can go and see at the Netziv, he goes and says that the Kenegdo is actually the Ezer. The Kenegdo, the pushback, they are realizing where we have a hole, where we are not doing things the way they should be, that is the ultimate of the Ezer. That's the ultimate of the favors that someone is going and doing for us. And so if we can go and take a look at this very different thing, we can go and see that Rashi is in a lot of ways our natural inclination to recoil from criticism. And the Netziv is showing us the path to being able to be better, at being able to go and do it. If we can go and retrain our muscle to go and be able to see that the Kenegdo is actually a favor for us. We can go now and revisit the other thing that we started off with. As we're going and taking a look at the relationship between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas, we can go and see how they were each going and embodying these two blueprints. Having makshili esrim v'arba kushiyata, going and pushing back what Reish Lakish was doing and what Rabbi Yochanan much preferred, is going and embodying the Netziv's approach, that it's the Kenegdo, that is the favor that in our chavrusas we're going and doing to each other. However, Rabbi Elazar was going much more like Rashi, and saying that we have to go and be supporting each other. If we are Zoche, it's going to be the Ezer. We go and take a look at where did Rashi get that model from. We go and look across Shas. We go and see where it was coming from. Who do you think was the one who originated that model of we have to go and be supporting each other? It was actually Rav Elazar. Go and see when Rashi is going and quoting it. That is the source of it. It was so ingrained in Rav Elazar that he embodied it. He lived it. If we go and see the same kind of way that Destin had a problem with being able to go and adjust his very deeply ingrained blueprint, that's the same kind of thing about why Rava Lazar might not have been able to go and adjust despite the coaching that he was going and getting from Rav Yochanan. So this is where we can go and see that when we have multiple people coming together in the Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, that we have ways in which our blueprints might be different from each other. In fact, they're almost given that they're going to be different from each other. We should go now when we are together with the rest of our family, the people that were in our house together. We're going and trying to figure out how can we go and live well, be able to go and have a smooth relationship, be able in this intense situation that we're in right now. How can we go and make sure that we're going to be able to identify where we might be having a disconnect in our blueprints, go and have an active discussion, be able to go and have ways in which you can go and talk through a bunch of your daily schedule, your approaches and styles around some types of things, be able to go and compare notes on your different blueprints, and be able to go and build connecto muscles also together, where you can go and be able to identify, push back on each other's ways of operating, that you can go and be able to appreciate it when you're going and hearing that criticism, that this is going to help us be able to get better and be able to go and resolve that across our blueprints. One of the other hopes that I would have is that as we're going, say, within just each of ourselves, we're going now and experiencing a brand new blueprint, that we can go and be able to maybe take some things from this new blueprint that we have, even when we go back to hopefully soon that we're going to be able to go back to normal life, quote unquote, be able to go back to that old blueprint that we had. Maybe go and find ways that the things that we're experiencing right now, we'll be able to go and still have echoes in it. They'll be able to go and take pieces from this blueprint that hopefully are productive things and not just leave them in the dust, not just go and go back to the old blueprint and forget about them, but instead be able to go and take them and be able to build a better blueprint and get stronger for it, be able to turn this into a Gamzu L'Tova for ourselves. So if we go back to those disconnects that we were talking about before, we can go and highlight how I am very much hoping that I'll be able to go and have the Modet part of the new blueprint, and also being able to go and have the Kavana that comes from going at your own pace, be able to go and have the Korbanos and the other things that we're saying. So being able to go and take those from the new blueprint column, be able to keep them and hopefully some of the things that I liked in the pre-corona blueprint, the fanaticism about being able to go to Minyan and be able to make sure that I'm going to be there with 9 others, all the other benefits that that comes from. But there's also some of the other ones where be able to go and realize that there is some things we might want to go and mix in at certain times. I'm hoping that I'll be able to go and find ways to still have family shalashuddises at the same time as I will go and be able to do the things in shul and be able to go and still tap what was the pre-corona operating that I was going and doing. Now, be able to have, while the gabbai is still clapping, maybe go be able to still have the pencil in my sitter, be able to go and have a double reminder around it. Find ways in which the things that you're doing now, hopefully you'll be able to go and maintain rather than just going and relapsing into the things that we were going and doing before. You can also find some final echoes of this in the time in the Midbar. We go and see the ways in which Bnei Israel had that Midbar blueprint that they were going and developing. Think about whether we have any echoes of that, any remaining practices that come from what Bnei Israel going through that in the Midbar. I was going thinking through that. To me, the one that we go and experience on a weekly basis is the one that we have an echo of. That also gives us a little bit of the tefillah that I will go and end with as we're going and seeing what we'll hopefully be able to go and see coming out of this. The echo that to me that we have of that time in the Midbar is the Lecha Mishnah. We have this as a reminder of how Hashem was going in an intense environment of the Midbar, how Hashem was going and protecting us and providing for all our needs, being able to go and give us the double dose of man on Shabbos. And so it's going to be reminding us that Hashem is protecting us even in the toughest of circumstances, providing for all of our needs when we're in it. And hopefully we can go and be able to keep reminding that of ourselves in this tough environment that we have now. Hopefully we will have the equivalent of the Lecha Mishnah that will go and be remaining with us of the blessings that we've been able to hopefully unearth, be able to go and be having these new things that we've been going and experiencing during this difficult time. That will be able to be the equivalent of the bracha of the Lecha Mishnah that reminds us that Hashem is always with us, protecting us and providing a lot of those brachas. So thank you again for coming on board and coming with us. Now, Dina, if we have anyone who wants to go and be able to have any questions or any reflections that they have, be able to go and learn from the things that people have as some of the things that have been coming to mind.
Absolutely. It looks like we have a question here. Isaac, I'm going to unmute your microphone.
Hey, Dina, it looks like it's muted again.
Yeah, I'm trying to... Isaac, can you unmute yourself?
Hey, or Isaac, to type it into chat or something like that for you, Dina.
Yeah.
there another one, or?
Does somebody else want to raise their hand or type a question into the chat?
No, very much looking forward. This is the last slide that I used to show to my classes when I'd be teaching at Harvard, when I'm teaching at USC. It would be from Pirkei Avos also, when we're going and saying that I learned a bunch from my teachers, even more from my colleagues, and the most from my students. So very much looking forward to being able to learn from Isaac and his question, but whether it's through the chat or whether it's live.
Let's see. Does anybody else have any questions? It looks like we lost Isaac, maybe, or I'm not sure.
Okay. No, it looks like we just got a question in the, I pulled up the chat one.
There you go.
So the question is there an exercise going to make your own blueprint in this, at this point? I think that the proactive ways that we can go and learn a little bit from these things that we've gone through about, go and find a disconnect in your blueprint that we talked about is a little bit of a different way that we can go and use that concept. And so if you go and find ways in which you're going to have a rude awakening to the negative side, but also go and think through your blueprint of how you would like to go and take some part of it that you've actually maybe been a little unhappy with, or maybe is not optimal. Be able to go and see where you might be able to go and discuss with someone who can go and help you be able to see a better way to go and do it now that you're going and changing so many different things. Go and proactively go and identify both the ways in which you have holes, but also where you want to create a hole in your blueprint. Let me go and rethink how I'm going to be able to go and maybe have my, how I'm going to go be Kovea Itim. Maybe now that I'm out of my routine, it might be a better way to go and not have the rigidity of our old routine. And now I can go and find a different part of the day that I can go and carve out to be able to go and establish that as the time that I'm going to learn. Maybe you can go and find, maybe go to someone and be able to go and ask them, what are the things that are so meaningful to you in davening that maybe I don't concentrate enough on right now? And then when you go and hear from them about that, ask them about why and how they have the, what the kavana they have for it is. And then be able to go, when you get to that next time in davening, be able to go and shape your blueprint, be able to go and shape the ways in which you're paying a little bit more attention to it by going and learning from that other person. So I think going and proactively breaking it down, like I said, we had in the 5-item table, there's several things that occurred to me after that. Those are the first 5 that came to mind. But the parts of your day, the ways in which you have aspirations for where you might be able to get more meaning out of it, where you might be able to go and find how you can go and connect with Hashem, even though it's the physical, how you can go and bring Kedusha to the daily things, and go and maybe go and brainstorm with people or think a little bit more deeply about maybe there's a safer out there that can go and give you some insights into how you can go and be able to carve that part of your blueprint in a more productive direction. And so I think that's where you can go and be able to have that iterative exercise of be able to go and identify the pieces you might want to go and work on, and work with some other people or with our Sfarim, be able to get some insights. You can go and have, in some ways, the longer you can go with this current blueprinting, if you can find those ways to do that, the longer you can go and solidify it, hopefully it will then become a bracha that when we go back to it, it'll be a deeper one that we've been able to go and add to our portfolio of our blueprint because we had a little bit more time to be able to go and work on it right now.
Looks like we have a question here from Dr. Dobrinsky. This muting is not working tonight. I'm sorry. I'm not sure what the problem is here.
Okay. So there's an observation that we have from Dovin Mopsis. Being able to learn from everyone else is the joy of being able to do these. His observation is, Chazal tell us that one who is able to pass over his natural inclination, all of his sins are forgiven. He says, I believe this ties in very well to the blueprint theme tonight. That's a great way to be able to go and extend it to another part of it. In some ways, it's one of the things that Chazal really do grapple with about how do the ways in which your chataim become now that they're merits for you. And this is in some ways a way to go and be able to see from a blueprint perspective that we can go and explain how it's not just that tshuva goes and wipes out the sins and gets us back to ground zero, but how it might be able to help us form a stronger blueprint because we've been able to go and undo those.
Dr. Dobrinsky, are you there?
Now you just hop in with one other one. We had another one that Shana Duretsky sent in. Very interesting in relating it to the seders that are coming up here. So many of us will be having smaller seders than usual this year. It'd be difficult to figure out the disconnect if you've never had the experience. Any ideas on how we should go and change our mindsets from a big seder to a very small one? I think Shada's asking that question to begin with is the critical one, the critical first step to be able to go and make it a proactive way that you can go and be able to shape that blueprint. If you go and think about the ways in which maybe you don't have the same kind of way in which everyone is battling to be able to go and get in their Divrei Torah, how can you go and use that to maybe get deeper into some topics, be able to go and really explore? A lot of times it's the 30-second vort that we're only able to go and do. If at your Seder this year, you can go and maybe find ways that you can go and really delve deeply into maybe half a dozen things, whereas before maybe it is that you had two dozen ways you can go and touch on things for 30 seconds each. You can go and take that same amount of time and go deeply into six. Then you might be able to go and have a very different Seder, the equivalent of spending more time at davening. Other ways in which you might be able to go and have some people play a different role than what they would usually be going and playing. Sometimes you might have where the youngest one went and said Manishtana. Maybe that youngest one isn't there right now, and it's going to have to be someone who's a little bit older to go and play that role. That stretching into a new kind of role is another one of the ways that people a lot of times are able to go and build those blueprint muscles. Gives you a different lens when you're going. Usually a lot of times we might go and focus on that we're giving the answer to the four kashas, but to be able to go and be the one asking the kashas and then someone different is the one who's going giving the answer. That kind of interplay might be a healthy one to go and give us a different perspective on the things that are going on at the Seder there. And so those are just a couple of the ones that come to mind right now for it. But I think you can take each of the 10 steps of the Seder, be able to go and work through maybe on each of them, how maybe having a different number of people opens up opportunities for us to be able to go and experience a little bit of a different Seder than what we maybe have. And some of it might be a different mix of people than what we maybe intended. Some of it might be a different mix of foods. If there's a different way in which we have a different menu for the Seder, that might go and lead to that we're using a different thing for Maror. It gives us a different appreciation of what Chazal go and point to, all the different types of Maror that we might have the different significance of. The ways in which kind of the menu constraints might go and open up a different set of meanings for us when we're going and seeing how the Seder is a little bit of a different landscape and having the different types of people at the table and a little bit of a different rhythm of a little bit more depth maybe rather than a little bit more of the breath and shallowness that maybe is when we have a lot more of the people at the Seder. Okay, so thank you, everyone, for all those ha'aras. Thank you very much for coming on board. For hopefully, as I mentioned, in the schus of this, maybe we can go and be able to bring a little bit more of the refuah shlema and the zechuyos to everyone who needs it now. And hopefully we'll be able to go and have those reminders throughout Chodesh Nisan about Hashem, the way in which he is going and being able to protect us and be able to go and help us be able to get stronger from all the things that we're going through.
Thank you, Dr. Wasserman. I apologize for the technical difficulties, but thank you for being a part of this program, and thank you to everyone for joining us.
Hey, thank you, Dina, for making it possible.
Have a good night, everyone. Chodesh Tov.